This show comes from 1943, and, you know, what could be more effective as an incongruity than to have a horror star on comedy? In fact, in a few weeks, we'll hear of an instance where Boris Karloff is the guest on Duffy's Tavern. Tonight, it's Peter Lorre with Abbott and Costello, and they include all the fluffs and the ad-libs in recovering from the fluffs. There are also some themes having to do with the flu and some jabs at Hitler, and, of course, Peter Lorre, who will, among other things, offer the services of his sanitarium in tonight's episode with Abbott and Costello.
Costello, where have you been? Look at you. Your clothes are dripping wet. There's water running out of your shoes. What happened to you?
Oh, I stopped to get a drink at the faucet outside the street.
Faucet?
Yeah.
You dummy, that's no faucet. That's a fire hydrant.
Fire hydrant?
Yes.
No wonder I went halfway to Pomona by gutter.
Gee.
I gotta get these wet clothes off. Because if I don't get...
What's the matter? Please, how many times have I told you when you sneeze, sneeze the other way?
I don't know any other way.
Hey, please, talk sense, will you? Do you realize you've probably caught a cold? Do you want the germs to spread?
Oh, I won't let them spread.
How can you keep germs from spreading?
I'll make them wear a girdle.
Oh. Now, that's ridiculous. You've got a cold in your head. How are you going to keep that cold in your head from going down into your chest?
I'll tie a knot in my neck. Hey, yeah, but what are you talking about? You're not so healthy.
Oh, I'll have you know, my friend, that I keep regular hours. Every night I go to bed with the chickens.
How do you all get in that little coop?
No, I'm trying to tell you that I go to bed early. And I'm up at the crack of dawn. Then I go out and chop wood for breakfast.
Chop wood for breakfast? How can you eat that stuff?
Listen, Costello, I chop wood for exercise. For example, every morning I jump out of bed and crawl around the room on all fours.
You crawl around on all fours?
Yes, that's the athlete in me.
Athlete? That's the monkey in you, brother.
Oh, hey, here's Ken Niles. Say, I'm glad you dropped in, Ken. Take a look at Costello. He doesn't feel very well.
Oh, just let some of the air out of his head. He'll be all right.
I mean, you got a lot of Niles. You got a lot of nerve there, Niles, to me, talking like that. Well, with such a swell-headed like you got.
Oh, I'll have you know I'm not swell-headed.
Oh, yeah? You're the only guy I know who gets the mumps above the ears.
Now, take it easy, Costello. You're a sick man.
Who's a sick man? I'm all right. I just got a little...
Ah! Good heavens, Bud. Did you hear Costello sneeze?
What's wrong with the way I sneeze with a little thing like that? What's wrong with it?
What's wrong with it? Well, if you have to sneeze, why don't you sneeze with your mouth closed?
I tried that once and blew out three of my teeth.
Now, wait a minute, Costello. Your sneezing is dangerous. I can catch your cold, then go home and my beautiful wife will get it in her lovely throat.
Her lovely throat?
Yes, Costello. Mrs. Niles has a neck like a swan.
Yes. And she's got webbed feet to match.
Oh, I heard that remark. And, Mr. Costello, you might be interested in knowing that all my friends think I have perfect features.
Is that your nose, or are you looking through a periscope?
Oh, stop that. Don't pay any attention to Costello, Mrs. Niles. You see, he's got a cold, and we're trying to help him.
Well, you know the old saying, starve a cold. Now, the first thing to do is to put him on a diet. No carbohydrates, no starches, no liquids, and no solids. You think you can stick to that diet, Costello?
Sure. Then what?
Then Kenneth and I'll split your ration book.
Oh, nice going. I heard you the first time. You're going to split it.
Oh, that was almost a wonderful joke, Poochie.
Oh, don't say that, darling. You're my Poochie.
Oh, no. You're my Poochie.
No, you're my Poochie.
If there's a dog catcher in the house, what are you waiting for?
Come, Kenneth. And as for you, Costello, I hope your cold is nothing trivial.
Well, I don't blame them for going out. The only way to avoid the flu is to flee.
What's that?
I mean, you've got to flee flu.
Gotta flee flu? What kind of talk is that?
I'm trying to tell you, the only way to be free from flu is to flee when flu flies. When there's flu, everybody flees.
Did you say fleas?
Certainly. I flee, you flee, he flees, she flees.
What, I got a cold or a flea circus?
You don't understand. To avoid the flu, you've got to flee.
I got to flee. Get him off of me, then. Get him off. I don't want any fleas.
No. I don't mean fleas like bugs. I mean fleas like flies.
Oh, let the fleas like flies. I don't want to break up no romance.
Now, look, it has nothing to do with fleas and flies. I'm trying to tell you, to avoid the flu, you must flee. The only way to be free from flu is to flee when flu flies.
Oh, you mean that to be free from flu, I got to flee when flu flies. And the fleas and flies have got nothing to do with the flu.
Now you've got it.
Now I've got it. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, let me put it this way. You're in the house. You open the window, and a cold germ comes in.
A cold germ comes in?
Yes. What would you do?
I'd give him a cup of hot tea. Who wants a shivering germ in the house?
Now, that's crazy. This cold germ attacks you and immediately starts to germinate. Before you know it, you've got a lot of nasty germs rushing through your system.
According to my system, the Russians are rushing through the Nazi Germans.
Well, that's true, Costello, but I'm talking about flu germs. Do you realize that germs travel with the speed of light? Now, one little sneeze... What? Huh? There you are. There you are. The germs are off. They've already traveled from California to Maine. They are now crossing the Atlantic.
I didn't even say goodbye to them.
Costello, right now, at this very minute, someone in Europe is catching your cold. Hello?
Meine Freunde, das letzte Mal! Als wir hier angekommen waren, im Hofen schreien alle zusammen!
Well, I sure fixed it out.
Yeah, what do you mean?
He's just sneezing now. The coffin will come later.
Well,
listen, Abbott, I'm telling you, I haven't got the flu. Now, get me out of this bed. Now, come on, get me out.
Now, stop that screaming, Costello. You want me, just pull that cord by the bed.
Oh, I did.
And what happened?
My pajamas fell down. Now, Abbott, if I had to stay in bed, why don't you give me some attention?
What are you talking about? Didn't I put some cracked ice on your head?
Yeah, but you didn't have to wait till you got the ice on my head before you cracked it. Now, Abbott, for the last time, I'm telling you, what am I doing in bed?
Well, it's part of the health building course I got from Professor Hercules. Starting tomorrow morning, you're going to get out of bed at 5 o'clock. Then at 5:10...
Back in bed.
No. At 5:10, you jump into a nice cold shower.
And I whistle.
You don't whistle.
I gotta whistle.
Why?
Well, there's no lock on a bathroom door.
Look, pay attention. At 5:10, you jump into the shower. Can't you just feel the ice cold water running down your back? Huh? No. Now stop that. Stop that.
It's cold.
Stop it. Then at 5:20.
Back in bed with a hot water bottle.
Listen. At 5:20, you take a bouncing horseback ride. 5:40.
Back in bed, face down.
Then at 6 o'clock, an hour of wrestling. 7 o'clock, 2 hours of handball. 9 o'clock, you walk 30 miles with a heavy pack on your back. And 12 to 1, you climb a mountain.
12 to 1, I don't make it.
Oh, you idiot. You never listen to me. Just wait till you see Hercules. Exercise has given him bulging biceps, rippling muscles, a massive chest. He's the strongest man in the world, the mighty Hercules. Come in.
I am the mighty Hercules. Honest I am. Honest.
See, Costello? Take a look at Hercules. Get a load of that muscle.
What muscle? The last time I saw a muscle like that was on a sparrow's ankle. You know, I could chalk his head and use him for a pool cue.
Hey, Costello.
Well, he reminds me of a radio program I heard. One man's famine.
Mr. Costello, as I analyze your case, my treatment for you should not be postponed. Let me show you what my course can do for you. Hand me the telephone book and I will tear it. Are you ready? And now the second page.
Look, Hercules, what's so great about that? I can bend bars with my bare hand.
Costello, now don't be silly. You're talking to the mighty Hercules.
Yeah, Mr. Costello, I'm a master muscle.
You're a mess of something, brother. And while I'm on a subject, you ain't seen nothing yet. Just feel my muscle.
Where is it? All I can feel is one little corpuscle.
Yeah, but ain't it got a hard head? Look, Abbott, for the last time I tell you there's nothing wrong with me. Now you've got to get me out of this bed. Now give me a lift.
All right. What was that?
I got my nose caught in the bed spring.
Come in.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm Peter Loring. Oh, Mr. Costello, I've come here to offer you the services of my sanitarium. I understand your health is run down.
Now, wait a minute, Laurie. Who told you all this?
Oh, nobody. You see, I get messages through my brain. My mind is like an open door.
What do you hear from the knob?
Quiet, Costello. Let me handle this. Mr. Laurie, you say you have a private sanitarium?
Oh, yes, and it's just the place for Mr. Costello. It is out in the woods, in a very lonely spot, where he can get away from it all. Far, far away.
I don't want to get that far away. Get me closer to town now. Get a lot of people around me, too. Ring those bells. Blow those horns. Blow those horns.
Please,
I don't
please.
Noise, I gotta have it. When you're around, I gotta have noise.
But please, Mr. Costello, you're scaring me.
I'm scaring you.
Costello, there's no sense in shouting.
That's right, Mr. Costello. Let us speak low.
I don't want to speak low. I always talk loud. Hooray! Happy New Year! Get around, everybody! Here's some John Charles Thomas. On the road to Mendel.
That's enough.
Hey, they like it.
Yeah, never mind. Look, pay no attention to him.
Who is this Frank Sinatra?
Will you? Never mind. Pay no attention to him, Mr. Laurie. I'll bring Costello out to your sanitarium tonight.
Oh, yes, please. And at midnight, I hope. When the moon is down.
No, tomorrow, when the sun is up. Way up! Plenty of lights, brother. Lots of lights. We're going to turn on a searchlight.
Costello, you're acting like an idiot.
Yes, Mr. Costello. I've had thousands of patients at my sanitarium, and I've never had one of them complain. You know what that proves, don't you?
Yes, sir. Dead men tell no tales.
The time is midnight.
Well, Costello, we'll be at Peter Lorre's sanitarium in a minute. He's a great doctor, Costello. He'll see that you get some rest and peace.
That's what bothers me. I don't want to rest in peace.
Quiet. Listen, a friend of mine was just about to die, and Dr. Laurie pulled him over the hump.
Which way?
Well, here it is. Peter Lorre's sanitarium. 1313 Gravesend Road.
What an address. Look at the sign on the gate. Deliver all bodies in the rear.
Now, all right, now stop complaining. Look how quiet and peaceful it is out here.
That's the first robin I've heard this spring.
Oh, shut up.
Quite a part, wasn't it?
You know, Lou, this is the kind of a place I've always wanted to visit. Look at that green stuff
clinging to the gate.
That green stuff clinging to the gate is me.
Now, don't be such a coward. Go ahead up to the door and knock.
Oh, so you think I'm a coward, huh? Okay, yeah, but I'll prove to you I'm a hero. I'll be brave. I'll show you what I'm made of. I'll knock on a door. I'll go in there. But before I do, there's just one thing I want you to do for me.
What's that?
Talk me out of it.
Now, none of that. Go ahead. Knock on the door. Don't be afraid. Why, Peter Lorre may not even be at home.
He's home, all right.
How do you know?
I see a straitjacket hanging on the line.
Costello, once and for all, will you please knock on the door?
Okay.
All right.
How do you do, gentlemen? Did you ring? No, I knocked. I thought I heard you whistle. Let me have your hat, please.
Don't you want the coat, too?
No, just the hat.
Just the hat? Who are you?
I'm a skull. I'm just going out for a walk.
Come on, Abbott. That's all. Let's get out of here!
Shh, quiet. Here comes Peter Lorre.
Ah, good evening, gentlemen. Welcome to my sanitarium. Now, come, Mr. Costello. Let me take you over here. Close to the fire.
Come on, no pushing, Lorre. Quit shoving. Hey, Abbott, help me now. Come on,
Costello,
help me out of here.
Costello.
The guy's pushing me to the fire.
No, nothing of the kind. What's the matter with you?
Yes, I mean you no harm. It's cold out tonight. You must be killed. Chilled.
I heard you the first time, brother. Get what I'm calling brother.
Please do not excite yourself, Mr. Costello. All I want you to do is to take a pill.
I'm not taking no pill. I'm taking a powder. Now! Come on, Abbott.
Wait a minute, Costello. If you want to cure your cold, you've got to listen to Dr. Lorre.
Abbott, I'm not sick. All I did was let out a little sneeze.
You see, you must not minimize your illness. Here, take this little blue pill.
I ain't taking no pill.
You heard the man. Take the blue pill.
Oh, you always went out. Okay.
Oh? Very good. Now take this red pill.
What's the red pill for?
Oh, that's in case the blue pill was poisoned.
Get away with those pills, Mr. Lorre, will you?
Just a minute. Be calm. Take it easy. Relax.
I don't want to relax. I want to jump. Come on, everybody, get up. Let's dance. Come on. I'll leave me with this guy.
You see,
alone?
Doctor? You see, Doctor?
Sounds like I'm alone.
I... See, Doctor, I told you that Costello is in bad shape. What he really needs is some exercise.
Oh, splendid. Let's go out and play some golf.
Golf? At midnight?
Oh, yes. Oh, last night I played a fine game with my friend, Frankenstein.
Now, there's a gruesome twosome.
Oh, it was a very interesting game. Frankenstein made a hole in one, so I buried him in it. You know, I play a very hot game.
Hot game? You probably play in the lower Hades. The lower Hades.
Oh, doctor.
Excuse me, please. That's one of my patients.
Oh, doctor. I just killed my keeper.
Yes?
I just killed my keeper.
Well, but why did you kill him?
He killed me first.
Hey, Abbott, now that guy wasn't kidding. Now, there's a body behind the couch.
Is he dead?
I can't tell. His head is missing.
Say, Costello, look. The body is getting up.
Abbott, he's coming towards me. Listen, mister. You're dead, ain't you?
Yes, I am dead.
Then why aren't you laying down?
If you must know, the floor is too cold.
That's the last straw. I'm getting out of here.
Now, stop worrying. There's nothing wrong with this place. What was that?
1 o'clock. Let's go.
Mr. Costello, I think you're running a temperature. I must call my assistant.
Who's your assistant, Dracula?
Oh, no, no. I'm mad at him. I caught him stealing from my blood bank.
Dr. Lorre, the operating table's all ready.
What? What operating table? You ain't operating on me. I'm not hungry.
You're not hungry?
You heard me. I don't want any cold cuts.
Oh, I must... I must insist, Mr. Costello. My diagnosis shows that the sneeze caused your cold, which caused poison to run through your system. This has affected your appendix, and your appendix must come out. Put him on the operating table, boys.
The first guy that touches me gets a fat lip.
Now, that's no way to talk. You must follow your doctor's advice if you ever expect to get well.
Okay, then. Lori, I'll let you take out my appendix on one condition.
Good. What's the condition?
You gotta take it out from the back.
From the back? From the back.
That's right.
But why?
Because I got a battleship tattooed on my stomach. And he is liable to sink it.
Oh, get out of here.
And now, here's Abbott and Costello with the final word.
Thanks, Ken. Well, Peter Lorre, it certainly was nice to have you with us tonight.
Yes, I certainly...
That's not your line, please.
Excuse me.
Oh, thank you, Bud. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Costello. I hope you didn't mind coming to my sanitarium. You should come again sometime.
I will, on Visitor's Day.
Oh, another thing, Mr. Costello. You should take care of your cold. You see, flu flies, and in order to be free from flu, you must flee when flu flies.
Say it again, Lori.
All right, I will.
I mean, without the script.
Oh, get out of here. Good night, folks. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Mom.
Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, from 1943 with their guest, the always creepy Peter Lorre. Our next feature will be the Lux Radio Theater with The Day the Earth Stood Still. But first, let's hear about some relations from someone who seems to have had no end of relatives, Gracie Allen.
Will we talk about tonight?
Well, how about my cousin Gallup Allen, the poll taker?
Gallup Allen, and he takes surveys.
Oh, yes, all kinds. Now, one was a poll that showed 38% of the homeowners of San Francisco are away at movies or parties at least three nights a week.
Is this true?
Yes, yes. They usually leave about 7:30 in the evening and stay out until about midnight.
And who did he get this information for?
His father, who's a burglar.
Those are really very nice relatives.
Well, so am I.
Oh, good.
And another thing he does is knock on people's doors and ask them what show they're watching on television.
Now, who did he get that rating for? Nielsen or Trendex?
No, for himself.
For himself he got that, yes.
You see, if he likes the show, he sits down and watches it with them. He hasn't got a set.
Enjoyable way to spend the evening.
And then Cousin Gallup took a poll to see if more American men slept on their right side or on their left side.
And how did he go about that?
Well, he went from house to house in the middle of the night and woke them up and asked them.
And which side do most of them sleep on?
He never found out.
Oh, he never found
but
out.
But he did learn that 85% of them kick people down the steps with their right foot.
Tell me, did your cousin ever make any money from these surveys?
Well, he did with a cigarette poll. He wanted to find out what the favorite brand was, and he did it by the butt method.
The butt method?
Yes. He'd pick up cigarette butts and measure them.
Measure them.
If they were short, it meant that people liked them better because they smoked them down first.
I see. And was there any money in this?
Oh, sure. While he was in the gutter picking up the butts, practically everybody who passed him gave him at least a dime.
Very glad that he was successful.
Oh, yes. And another survey, Gallup was supposed to find out what a man of 40 likes and dislikes.
Oh.
And he was sent out to interview 200 men of that age.
And what does a man of 40 like and dislike?
Well, according to Cousin Gallup's survey, he likes checkers and soft cereal. He doesn't care about women and having good time.
Hold it. That's what a man of 40 likes and dislikes?
Well, Cousin Gallup thought he'd save time, so instead of interviewing 200 men who were 40, he interviewed 100 men who were
80.
Yes.
I'm glad that he didn't interview me.
Well, why would he? You don't look anywhere near 40.
41 or 42.
I can go on like this for a long time.
Yes. Well, his most successful survey was the one he took for the telephone company.
Oh.
He had to find out how many people had telephones, and the answer was
100%. 100%, huh?
Yes, everyone he called had one.
Had a phone? Well, Gracie, have you got another relative we can talk about tonight?
How about my cousin Casey Allen, the railroad man?
Casey Allen, that sounds like a real interesting character.
Yes. Well,
his name was Casey Allen.
Yes. He started out as a conductor. His train went from San Francisco to Los Angeles. And on his very first day, he got into a big argument with a lady passenger. She wouldn't buy a ticket for Cleveland.
Why should she? Cleveland is in Ohio.
Well, maybe now, but that day Cleveland was right there on the train sitting on his mother's lap.
Oh, Cleveland was a little boy's name.
Yes. And she wouldn't buy him a ticket because he was underage. She said he was so young he couldn't even speak yet.
Oh, and Casey wouldn't believe her.
Well, not at first, but Cleveland talked him into it.
Well, look, if the kid couldn't speak, how could he talk Casey into it?
Then they made Casey an engineer. He was always on time, except when a cow was standing on the tracks.
Oh, that sort of delayed him.
Well, for 2 hours.
Oh, for 2 hours.
See, the cow was very heavy, and they couldn't move her till Casey figured out a way to make her lighter.
Well, what'd he do?
Milked her.
Milked her. That was a good solution.
Mm-hmm. And the cow must have liked the way he did it because the next day she was
back on the track again.
Well, George, when you're an engineer and you pull that whistle all day, you're bound to be.
Yeah, well, that fellow was really a pro. Did he like being an engineer?
Well, he did till they put him on that run that went through the desert.
Oh, that was sort of dry and hot, and I guess he didn't enjoy that.
Well, he solved that problem.
Oh, he did, huh?
Yes, he always put a handful of Mexican jumping beans inside his hat.
Mexican jumping beans?
Yes, when they hopped up and down in the skull, it sounded like rain on the roof.
Oh, and a cool wall? Yeah. I never met this Casey Allen.
No, he was really something, George. In his overalls and his bandana around his neck, he was very handsome, except for his broken nose.
Oh, he had a broken nose?
Yes. Well,
How did he get that?
Oh, that was right after his first run.
Oh, that's right after the first run?
Yeah.
His nose was broken?
Yeah, well, you know how engineers lean out of the cab to see where the train is going?
Yeah.
Well, he passed another train, and the other engineer was also leaning out.
Well, Gracie, have you got another relative we can talk about tonight?
Well, my cousin's in the hospital with a broken leg.
Oh, which one?
Oh, I don't know. Whether it's the right or the left, he didn't say.
I mean, which cousin?
Oh, the bus driver, Rush Allen.
Rush Allen, the bus driver, and he got into an accident?
Well, it wasn't his fault.
Oh.
You see, he was driving the bus and he couldn't see where he was going.
Why not?
Oh, well, he won about 20 safety awards, and he was so proud of them that he pasted them all over the windshield.
Well, what does he drive, a transcontinental bus or a local one?
Well, that depends on how much gas he has.
I guess I asked a silly question.
That's all right, dear. We've been married so many years, I'm used to it.
Oh, yeah, well, thank you. Is he a good driver?
Oh, there's no driving problem my cousin couldn't solve.
I see.
Like the time his bus was going from San Francisco to Sacramento.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he was halfway there when he hit such a big bump in the road that it knocked his rear vision mirror off.
Well, what did he do?
Well, he knew it was dangerous to drive when he couldn't see the cars behind him.
Yeah.
So he turned around, went back to San Francisco.
Well, what good did that do?
Well, now the cars that were behind him were in front of him.
Well, I guess when you're a bus driver, all kinds of things happen.
They certainly do.
Jesse, say goodnight.
Good night, everybody.
A pastiche of some of those final curtain calls from Burns and Allen, during which Gracie regales George and, of course, us with stories of her various relatives. Next up, The Day the Earth Stood Still from Lux Radio Theater. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It was a very effective movie in 1951. Had something to do with telling humankind in the atomic age that it was on the brink of great danger and that some wisdom would be very helpful to go along with all that new technology. Well, who better to impart some of that wisdom but an individual from outer space. It's played by Michael Rennie in the movie and also in tonight's broadcast, featuring that celebrated phrase, Klaatu Barada Nikto. You'll find out about that. And about Mr. Carpenter, who strikes up a friendship with young Bobby and goes to see Washington. Featured in our cast, also William Conrad and Billy Gray, who went on television to play the son in Father Knows Best. Tonight, it's The Day the Earth Stood Still, starring Michael Rennie, Lux Radio Theater from January 4th, 1954.
Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, bring you the Lux Radio Theater.
Starring Michael Rennie and Gene Peters in The Day the Earth Stood Still.
I have a pleasant question that has puzzled and intrigued our world for centuries. Is there life on any of the other planets? So in tonight's play, we will tell you of a possible momentous event in our future. The arrival of this planet, on this planet, of a man from the outer space. The day the Earth stood still. And as our stars of this provocative drama from 20th Century Fox, we have one of their fastest rising stars, Michael Rennie, co-starring with that outstanding actress, Jean Peters. And Jean Peters as Helen Benson.
It was a pleasant spring day, an ideal day for a walk in the park. A day to push the baby buggy and be glad you were alive. There'd been at least 20 such sparkling days that spring, and perhaps a billion or more of them since the Earth began. And nothing had ever happened to spoil them but a few small fires, or a slight head cold in the evening, or a rain squall. This spring day, in the middle of the marvelous 20th century, was different. It was the most different day that had happened to mankind since the first Christmas. In Hong Kong first on the British River.
But that's impossible. That thing must be doing about 4,000.
That can't be aircraft, sir. It must be a buzz ball.
Better give an alarm. Keep it steady, though. Maybe faulty equipment.
If the British radar in Hong Kong was faulty, so was the radar all over the Orient and Asia and Europe. So were the announcers on the radio.
This is Moscow.
This is Calcutta, India.
This is Radio Luxembourg.
The American radar screen quickly confirmed the fact that there was nothing wrong with the British radar, and that there was something very gravely wrong 40 miles out in space, far above the Earth.
Luxon at Ferris to Baker. Ferris to Baker. I have an object at 200,000 feet. 4,000 miles an hour.
Then it was here. Incredibly, it was here. Burning down through the sky over Washington, D.C., hovering over the mall. Descending. Not a sound. Stillness. Not a move from the cordon of tanks and armored cars and troops in full battle dress. Not a sound or gesture from the monstrous domed disc resting on the grass.
The ship designed for travel outside the Earth's atmosphere landed in Washington today at 3:47 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We still do not know where it came from. The ship is now resting exactly where it landed 2 hours ago. So far, there is no sign of life from inside the ship. Behind the cordon of troops, tanks, and artillery is a huge crowd of curiosity seekers. Every eye, every weapon is trained on the ship. The atmosphere is one of terrific tension rather than of fear. It's been that way for... Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen. I think something's happening. The spaceship is opening up. Someone is coming out.
A wedge is opened in the smooth, unbroken metal skin of the spaceship. A ramp slithers out on the grass. Against an eerie glow of unearthly light from inside the spaceship stands the spaceman. He is a man, entirely like ourselves. He wears a close-fitting suit like a deep-sea diver's armor, but of alien material. The spherical helmet entirely conceals his head. He holds up his hand. He is going to speak.
We have come to visit you in peace and with goodwill. Receive me as a friend.
Here he comes, men. Watch it. Keep that BAR trained on him.
He's going for something in his tunic, sir.
Quiet.
It's a ray gun or something. I'm going to let him have it now.
Oh, wait. You fool, he's down. Hold back that crowd. Everybody. Back.
Your wound doesn't look too bad.
I'm sorry that you shouldn't have gone for that ray gun.
It was not a weapon.
He understands.
It was a gift for your president. With it, you might have studied life on another planet.
What's bothering the crowd, Lieutenant? Tell him to...
Oh, no.
No!
A nightmare stands on the ramp leading out of the spaceship. A mechanical giant, monstrous, all metal and menace, with a visor in his helmet lifting slowly, revealing a dreadful light boiling within that metal head. And suddenly, out of that incandescence, a narrow ray. Rifles, tanks, artillery glow with that terrible incandescence and become vapor in a mush of puddled heat. And in the deathly silence that follows, the robot strides down the ramp. The Avenger. From where?
They've let the bus go. He won't hurt you now.
Let's get you to a hospital.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
The doctors here tell me your wound is not serious.
No. It amazes them that it's almost healed already.
I'm very glad.
It should serve as some sort of indication of our powers.
My name is Harley, secretary to the president. I've been told you speak our language fluently, that your name is Mr. Klaatu.
Just Klaatu.
The president has asked me to convey our deepest apologies for what has happened.
Sit down, Mr. Harley.
I'm sure I don't have to point out that your arrival was something of a surprise. Had you been traveling long?
About 5 months. Your months?
You must have come a long way.
About 250 million of your miles.
Naturally, we're very curious to know where you come from.
From another planet. Let's just say that we're neighbors.
Rather difficult for us to think of another planet as a neighbor.
I'm afraid in the present situation you'll have to learn to think that way.
The present situation?
I mean the reasons for my coming here.
Would you care to talk about it?
Not now, or with you alone.
Perhaps you'd rather discuss it personally with the president.
I want to meet with the representatives from all the nations of the Earth.
I'm afraid that would be a little awkward.
Why?
In view of the tensions and suspicions in our world today, such a meeting would be impossible.
Mr. Harley, my mission here concerns the existence of every last creature who lives on Earth. It must not be complicated by the childish jealousies, intrigues, suspicions of your planet.
Our problems are very complex. You mustn't judge us too harshly.
I'm impatient with stupidity. My people have learned to live without it.
The president will, of course, do his best to bring about the meeting you desire. I know it will be quite useless. I wish it were otherwise. I'm very sorry, Mr. Klaatu.
Wait. Before making any grave decisions, I think I should get out among your people. Become familiar with the basis for these strange, unreasoning attitudes.
Our military people insist that you do not attempt to leave the hospital. The door will be locked. I'm sure you understand. Good day, Mr. Klaatu.
The door will be locked. Will it now?
Klaatu escaped. Nor could the embarrassing news of his disappearance long be suppressed. It was read about in the papers and described in excited tones over the radio.
Authorities at Walter Reed Hospital still refuse to comment on how he managed to escape, except to say that he broke into a hospital locker and stole clothing belonging to a staff doctor.
While the government does not minimize the crisis,
this was the latest and the only news. And among the countless millions listening were two men and a woman, an ordinary home on an ordinary street in Washington. Mrs. Crockett's rooming house.
We are warned, however,
there was Mrs. Crockett, Helen Benson, and little Bobby.
We may be up against powers that are beyond our control or understanding.
Oh, I just can't stand any more of this. Oh, I wanted to hear more, Mrs. Crockett.
It's exciting, isn't it, Mother?
Hush, Bobby.
Exciting? It's enough to drive a person... Who are you?
I'm sorry. I saw your sign outside and the door was open. My name is Carpenter.
Yes?
I'm looking for a room.
Yes. I do have a nice room.
Are you a G-man?
No, I'm afraid I'm not.
I bet he is, Mom. I bet he's looking for that spaceman.
I think we've all been hearing too much about spacemen, Mr. Carpenter.
This is Mrs. Benson, Mr. Carpenter.
How do you do?
And this is little Bobby, my youngest guest.
Hi.
I'm Mrs. Crockett. You're a long way from home, aren't you, Mr. Carpenter?
How did you know?
Oh, I can tell a New England accent every time. This way, please, Mr. Carpenter. And so this Sunday morning, we asked the question that has been plaguing the entire world for 2 days now. Where is the creature, and what is he up to?
Eat your cereal, Bobby.
Oh, Mom, I'm almost low as it is.
Bobby.
Okay, Mr. Carpenter.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Crockett. Please, go on reading.
Creature, and what is he up to? If he could build a spaceship that can fly to Earth, and a robot that can destroy our tanks and guns, what other terrors can he unleash at will?
What a man.
Obviously, we must track down this monster and destroy him before he destroys us. Correct. Then why don't they do it?
This spaceman, or whatever he is, we automatically assume he's a menace. Maybe he isn't, after all.
Well, then where is he, Mrs. Benson? What's he up to?
Maybe he's afraid.
Oh, he's afraid.
Well, after all, he was shot the minute he landed here. I just was wondering what I'd do.
Perhaps before deciding upon a course of action, you'd want to know more about the people here.
Nothing strange about Washington.
A person from another planet might disagree with you.
Oh,
it's all right, Mrs. Crockett. That's Mr. Stevens calling for me. Uh-huh. I'll go to the door.
That awful robot standing there like an ugly iron statue. Give me the shivers.
Morning, Tom.
Hello, Helen. Hey, can anybody see us?
Oh, no.
So, all right, we're all set. I picked up some sandwiches and put gas in the car and the radio is busted so we can forget about the spaceman for a day, huh?
I haven't been able to arrange for anyone to stay with Bobby. Mrs. Crockett's going out and I don't suppose we could take him with us.
Oh, we could.
Just today. Mrs. Crockett has plans and I don't know who else to ask.
I haven't any plans.
Oh, Mr. Carpenter.
I'd be glad to spend the day with Bobby, if you'd let me.
Oh, great, thanks.
Well, it's very nice of you to offer. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Carpenter, this is Tom Stevens.
Hi, how do you do? Bobby and I had a fine time yesterday afternoon. I thought he might show me around the city today.
Well...
Please, I'd enjoy it.
And this is where my father is buried. Robert Benson, Virginia, 1st Lieutenant, 45th Infantry. April 10th, 1916, January 29th, 1944.
Your father was very young, wasn't he, Bobby?
He was killed at Anzio.
Did all these people here die in wars?
Oh, most of them. Didn't you ever hear of Arlington Cemetery?
I'm afraid not.
You don't seem to know much about anything, Mr. Carpenter.
I've been far away, Bobby.
Don't they have places like this where you've been?
Not like this one. You see, they don't have any wars. Let's walk.
All right.
What would you like to do now?
Go to the movies.
All right.
No fooling?
No fooling. Do you have to have money to go then?
Well, I've got $2. I'll treat you, okay?
No, I want to take you. Look, do you think they'd accept these?
Oh, gee, what are they? Diamonds?
Well, in some places, these are what people use for money. They're easy to carry and they don't wear out.
I'll bet they're worth $1 million.
Would you give me your $2 for two of these?
Sure, okay.
There you are.
Let's not say anything to Mom about this, huh?
Why not?
Well, she doesn't like me to take advantage of people. Hey, before we go to the movies, would you like to see the Abraham Lincoln Memorial?
Thank you. Yes, I would.
That's the Gettysburg speech up there.
That this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. Those are great words.
That's some statue.
That's the kind of man I'd like to talk to. Bobby, who is the greatest man in America today?
Oh, gee, I don't know. The spaceman, I guess.
I was speaking of Earthmen.
Oh, I don't know. The president?
I mean the greatest philosopher, the greatest thinker, scholar.
Oh, well, that's Professor Barnhart, I guess.
Yes, Professor Barnhart.
He's the greatest scientist in the world. He lives right here in Washington. Right near where my mother works.
Where is that?
Department of Commerce. She's a secretary. Why?
I have an idea, Bobby. Let's go see Professor Barnhart.
What for?
You just said he's the greatest man in America.
Well, you're kidding, aren't you?
Wouldn't you like to meet him?
Oh, sure I would. Oh, go on. I bet you'd be scared.
Maybe we can scare him more than he can scare us.
I like you, Mr. Carpenter. You're a real screwball. Gee, maybe the professor isn't at home.
Let's take a look through that window.
I'll bet this is where he works. Look in there. Books all over. Blackboard's full of stuff. That door's locked, too.
Is it? I know it isn't, Bobby.
Well, that's funny.
We'll go in and wait for him. I'm sure he won't mind.
Gee, just think. All the brains that goes on in here. Well, what's all that stuff on the blackboard?
It's a problem in celestial mechanics.
Well, what's the matter?
You'll never get the answer that way. Let's see.
Hey, it says door erased. Don't touch.
This is right. Check. Correct. Correct. And here's where he gets off the track. Well, we'll fix that. So.
You must be an arithmetic teacher, I bet.
Differentiate the equation. There.
Who are you?
Uh-oh.
How dare you come in like this? How dare you write on that blackboard? Do you realize the professor's been working on that problem for weeks?
He'll solve it in no time now.
What do you want?
We came to see Professor Barnhart.
Well, he's not here, and he won't be back until evening. I think you better leave.
Will you tell him that Mr. Carpenter is here? 1615 M Street, Northwest. I think he'll want to talk to me.
Indeed.
Thank you. Oh, it may have entered your mind to erase what I've written on the blackboard.
It certainly has.
I wouldn't do that. The professor needs it very badly. Come on, Bobby.
Carpenter, 1650 M Street, Northwest. Carpenter, M Street. Operator, give me the police.
Evening of the same day. Tom Stevens and Helen Benson drive up to the boarding house after their picnic, quite unaware of the dark squad car parked at the curb a few feet ahead.
Well, here we are.
Thank you, Tom. It was a wonderful day.
You, still haven't answered my question.
Oh, you know how I feel, Tom. But I still want time to think it over.
If I could only tell the boss I was getting married and acquiring two dependents.
You're a good salesman.
A good salesman wouldn't give you time to think about it.
Good night.
Didn't you forget something? Now, good night.
Good night.
Mr. Carpenter.
Hi, Mom.
Hello, darling.
Mrs. Benson, this is Mr. Brady.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Well, Mr. Brady's a government agent.
Oh? Did you have a nice day, Bobby?
We had a swell time, didn't we, Mr. Carpenter?
Yes, we did.
We went to the movies and had a banana split, and we went to see Daddy.
Oh. I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Carpenter.
I enjoyed every minute of it.
We better get going.
Yes, good night, Bobby.
Good night.
I'll tell you the rest of that story tomorrow. Good night, Mrs. Benson.
Good night.
Nice meeting you, Mrs. Benson.
Thank you. Why did Mr. Carpenter have to go with Mr. Brady? I don't know.
Maybe it was a mistake. Upstairs with you.
Yeah. We sure had fun today. We went all over Washington and went to see Professor Barnhart.
Professor Barnhart?
Oh, sure.
Barnhart? Up to bed now. Pronto.
Is this the man you wanted to see, Professor Barnhart?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Brady. If I may speak to Mr. Carpenter alone, please.
I'll wait outside, Professor.
You are Mr. Carpenter?
Yes, Professor.
Who wrote those equations on my blackboard?
My clumsy way of introducing myself.
Forgive the manner in which you were picked up. Hilda called the police before I saw your annotations on the board.
I appreciate the need for security, Professor.
I have not quite fathomed the problem, even with your remarkable assistance, Mr. Carpenter.
Let's look at it, sir. All you have to do now is substitute this expression at this point.
Yes, that will reproduce the first order term. But what about the effect of the other terms?
Negligible. With variation of parameters, this is the answer.
How can you be so sure? Have you tested this theory?
I find it works well enough to get me from one planet to another.
Klaatu.
I spent 2 days at your Walter Reed Hospital. I was interviewed by...
I need no proof. This blackboard is proof.
If you are not interested, or if you intend to turn me over to the Army, we needn't waste any more time.
Interested? Will you excuse me one moment, please?
Mr. Brady, you may go now. Please thank General Cutler and tell him... Tell him that I know this gentleman. So much for that, Klaatu. Now, please, sit down.
You have faith, Professor.
Faith and, curiosity. Do sit down. I have several thousand questions to ask you.
I would like to explain my mission here.
That is my first question.
It was my hope to discuss this officially with all the nations of the world. I was not allowed the opportunity. Now, we know from scientific observation that your planet has discovered a rudimentary kind of atomic energy. We also know that you're experimenting with rockets.
Yes, that is true. So what exactly is the nature of your mission?
To warn you that your planet faces danger. What I have to say must be said to all concerned. I come to you as a last resort. Must I take drastic action in order to get a hearing?
What sort of action do you mean?
Violent action? Perhaps leveling the island of Manhattan? Or toppling the Rock of Gibraltar into the sea? Well?
Would you, for example, be willing to meet with a group of scientists I'm calling together? We're having our first meeting tonight. Perhaps you could explain your mission to them, and they in turn could present it to their various peoples.
That is what I came to see you about.
One thing, Klaatu. Suppose this group should reject your proposals. What is the alternative?
There is no alternative, Professor. In such a case, the planet Earth would have to be eliminated.
Such power exists?
I assure you, such power exists.
The scientists who are attending these meetings have come here from all over the world. Now, this power you speak of, they must be made to realize that it exists. Now, you mentioned a demonstration of force.
Yes.
Something that would affect the entire planet?
That can be arranged.
Perhaps a little demonstration.
Something dramatic but not destructive. It's quite an interesting problem. Would tomorrow be all right?
If you say so.
Say about noon?
Then tomorrow at noon. Good.
Going out tonight, Mrs. Benson?
Oh, it's you, Mr. Carpenter.
I'm afraid I startled you.
Yes, I am going out. Mr. Stevens is calling for me.
Everyone seems so...
Jittery is the word.
Bobby's the only person I know who isn't jittery. He's a fine boy, Mrs. Benson.
Naturally, I think so.
Warm, friendly, intelligent. He's the only real friend I've made since I've been here.
Mr. Carpenter, this is none of my business. But why did that detective come here last night? That Mr. Brady?
Bobby and I tried to see Professor Barnhart in the afternoon, but he wasn't in. Apparently, they thought I was looking for secrets of some kind.
Well, that must be Tom now.
Oh, Mr. Stevens, do come in. Helen is in the sitting room.
Alert Mrs. Crockett. She has a romantic mind.
Hello there, Helen. Got a minute to spare. You ready?
Hello, Carpenter. Picture starts at 8:50 on the dot, Helen.
I'll be ready in a minute. I was just talking to Mr. Carpenter.
Oh, I hope Mr. Carpenter won't think I'm intruding.
Excuse me. I was just going up to my room. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Carpenter.
Have a good time, both of you.
Thank you. Tom, that was awful.
I'm sorry. I guess I'm just tired of hearing about Mr. Carpenter. Mr. Carpenter.
Shh. I don't like the way he's attached himself to you and Bobby. After all, what do you know about him?
Very little, it's true. Well, let's not stand and talk about it anymore. I'll go up and get my things.
Gee, Mr. Carpenter, thanks a lot for helping me with my homework.
That's all there is to it, Bobby, my boy. All you have to remember is first find the common denominator, then subtract.
I got you. Thanks, Mr. Carpenter.
I'm leaving with Tom, Bobby. You'll go to bed on time now, won't you?
I'll say goodnight again, Mrs. Benson.
Mr. Carpenter.
Yes?
Nothing. Good night.
Good night. Night, Bobby.
Bobby, I think it would be better if you didn't see quite so much of Mr. Carpenter.
Well, gee, why, Mom? He's swell. I like him. And he's awful good at arithmetic. He even helped Professor Barnhart.
I'm sure he's a very nice man. I just think he might prefer to be left alone. Now, go to bed, darling.
Why would he want to be left alone?
Don't forget to brush your teeth. Come in.
Bobby, do you have a flashlight I might borrow for tonight?
Oh, sure, Mr. Carpenter. It's a real Boy Scout one.
Thank you, Bobby.
Why do you want it?
The light in my room went out. See you tomorrow. Better get into bed now.
Gee, I wonder if the batteries are any good. Mr. Carpenter!
Bobby went to the door and opened it. What he saw down the hallway puzzled him. Mr. Carpenter's door was ajar and light was pouring out of his room.
Bunny, he said his light went out.
Then Mr. Carpenter came out carrying the flashlight and stealing down the steps like a thief. This was peculiar. But this was adventure. Bobby followed Mr. Carpenter, and what he saw couldn't have been a dream. It was too real. But it couldn't have been true either. It was too deliciously frightful. Dream or not, it was filled with darkness, stung by staccato flashes from a genuine Boy Scout flashlight. Flashes that activated a giant robot into knocking out his guards so that Mr. Carpenter from the boarding house could get into the shed the army had built around the spaceship. And dream or not, Bobby saw this Mr. Carpenter go into the spaceship. And then a wave of sheer terror swept over Bobby at last, and he turned and ran wildly away. The way little boys always run in nightmares. Trying so hard and moving so slowly and all the time falling down. It was awful. It was swell. When his mother came home around midnight, Bobby was curled up on the sofa. Instantly, he jumped up and ran to her and to Tom Stevens as they came into the hallway.
Mom, listen.
Bobby, what are you doing down here at this hour, fully dressed?
Well, Mr. Stevens, Mom, I had to tell you.
Tell me what?
What's the matter, Bobby?
I followed Mr. Carpenter tonight, right after you left, and gee, where do you think he went? Right into the spaceship.
Now, Bobby, just one minute.
Honest, Mom, I saw him. They got a shed built around the spaceship so nobody can get to it. But Mr. Carpenter flashed a signal to that Iron Man up there. And what do you think?
Bobby, have you been dreaming again?
Well, sure.
No, Mom, honest, I haven't. I promise you, I saw it.
Where did you see all of this?
Well, I'm telling you, on the lawn, down at the mall. In that place where the soldiers are all out in front.
And where were the soldiers all this time?
Well, that robot fella grabbed him and knocked him out.
Oh, Bobby.
Yeah, and then Mr. Carpenter walked into the shed, and the spaceship opened up, and he walked right inside, and it closed again. Gee, I like Mr. Carpenter, but I'm scared, Mom.
Oh, darling, it was just a bad dream. We'll prove it to you. Tom, will you see if Mr. Carpenter's still up? Ask him to come down here a minute. Yes, Tom?
Helen, he's not there, but look what I found on the carpet.
It can't be a diamond.
planet?
I don't know.
It's much too big.
It looks real to me.
Oh, Mr. Carpenter's got lots of them. He gave a couple of them to me.
Here.
He gave you these? Well, not exactly. I gave him $2.
I don't know, but this whole thing, it just does, that doesn't make sense. Look, Helen, do you think it's all right for you to stay here?
There's a strong lock on my door, and Bobby's going to sleep in my room tonight.
Okay.
Upstairs, nightmare boy.
It wasn't a nightmare.
Bobby.
Yeah, Mom?
Bobby, your shoes are soaking wet.
Yeah, grass on the mall was kind of wet. Good night, all.
Oh, Tom, I wonder.
Promised what Professor Barnhart termed a little demonstration. Promised it for the following day at noon. It is now 12:02. In the Department of Commerce building, Helen Benson has left her office on her way to lunch. She stands in the corridor waiting for an elevator. Mr. Benson.
Mr. Carpenter. What are you doing here?
I came to see you.
Well, I was just going to lunch. What is it?
I saw Bobby this morning before he went to school.
Yes?
I want to know what he told you.
Oh, Bobby has such an active imagination.
Did you believe what he told you?
Really, Mr. Carpenter, this is where I work, and I only have a short time for lunch today. If you'll excuse me...
I'll go down with you.
If you like. The service elevator's open. You'll have to press the button, Mr. Carpenter.
Oh, yes, yes.
It was just 5 seconds before noon of that fateful day when Helen Benson and Mr. Carpenter stepped into that electric elevator. At that same moment, the enormous commerce of our briskly modern world roared and thundered in the street. High noon. And silence. All over the world, traffic stopped dead in a million streets. Here and there, a horse-drawn vehicle clopped its melancholy way among the motionless motors. Bicycles moved before awe and the common desolation made the riders stop of their own free will. Electric clocks stopped on the dot of noon. All across the powered world, the machines stood still. Toasters failed to pop and battle fleets on maneuvers drifted aimlessly on their dead propellers. Joe Smith's milkshake didn't spin, and the humming turbines deep in Hoover Dam didn't produce currents. Mrs. Housewife's washer stopped in the middle of its cycle, and electric lights went out all over the world. At a conference table in Washington, a hasty council of the armed services was held.
As far as we can tell, gentlemen, all electric power has been cut off all over, with few exceptions. And even these exceptions are remarkable. Hospitals, planes in flight, that sort of thing. I wish I could be more specific, but all communications are out. I can tell you that we are preparing to declare a state of national emergency, but before we start discussing plans, I want a report from Colonel Ryder.
All I can report, General, is that the robot at the spaceship was discovered to have moved last night. It knocked unconscious the two soldiers guarding the entrance to the shed the Army engineers had built around the spaceship, indicating that someone, presumably the spaceman, had wanted to get into the ship for one reason or another.
In all likelihood, to signal for this demonstration of his planet's power. Go on, Colonel.
Oh, that's all, sir.
Well, gentlemen, until now, we've agreed on the desirability of capturing this man alive. We can no longer afford to be soft in this matter. We will get him alive if possible, but we must get him. Is that clear, gentlemen? Dead or alive, get him. Like
electric power has been neutralized on the stroke of noon as a token of the spaceman's power and as a warning to the Earth. While they've been trapped between floors in an elevator, the spaceman has told Helen his identity and purpose here.
I've already told you more than I told Professor Barnhart, because my life, in a sense, is in your hands. But if I die, a world, your world, may die too.
Yes, I understand.
I thought if you knew the facts, you'd appreciate the importance of my not being caught before the meeting tonight with the world scientists.
Yes, of course. Of course I do. You hold great hope for this meeting, don't you?
I can see no other hope for your planet. If the meeting should fail, then I'm afraid there is no hope.
Oh, the light. And we started again.
It must be 12:30.
Yes, exactly. Where are you going now?
Back to the boarding house. I'll be safe there for the afternoon. I'll be able to keep an eye on Bobby. He's the only other person who knows about me.
No. Wait a minute. There is someone else.
How? They can't be.
Tom. He was with me last night when Bobby told me what he saw.
Oh.
Well, of course, he doesn't know anything definite, and well, he talked to me first before... But then we can't take a chance, can we?
Can you get in touch with him?
I think so.
I mean at once, now.
I'll try.
You will. You must.
Hello. Operator, I was connected with my party. Please. Hello? Oh, is this Mr. Tom Stevens' office again? We were disconnected. I must speak to Mrs. No, Mr. Stevens. Yes, this is Mrs. Benson. Benson? Well, when do you expect him in then? But will you tell him I called and please not to leave his office? I'm coming down to see him. Yes, yes, it's very important. To you, too.
Margaret, this is Mr. Stevens. I just got in. Now, listen, call the Pentagon.
Who?
Miss Benson, when? Never mind. This is more important. Listen. Call the Pentagon and find out who's in charge of the spaceman business. Whoever it is, I want to talk to him.
Tom.
Call me back right away and don't take any other calls. Brush him off fast.
Tom, I've been trying to get you all afternoon.
I've got some pretty terrific news about your good friend, Mr. Carpenter.
What about him?
He's the man from the spaceship. I had that diamond or whatever it is checked at 3 different places. Nobody on Earth's ever seen a stone like that. And after what Bobby's told us, that's enough for me. Why is it nobody knows about this Mr. Carpenter? Why hasn't he got any money?
All right, Tom. It's true.
How do you know?
You've just got to promise me you won't say a word to anybody.
Oh, nobody but the Pentagon.
Please, Tom.
Are you crazy? After what happened today, he's a menace.
You don't understand. You don't realize how important it is.
Important. Of course it's important, and we can do something about it.
You mustn't do anything about it, Tom. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about.
I say he is dangerous. It is our duty to turn him in.
He isn't dangerous. He isn't a menace. He told me what he came here for.
Oh, honey, don't be silly. Because you happen to like the guy, do you realize what this will mean for us? I'll be the biggest man in the country. I'll write my own ticket.
Is that what you're thinking about?
Listen, somebody's got to get rid of him.
Tom, I'm not going to let you do it. Tom, don't.
Hello, Margaret? Yeah. General Cutler? Good. Now hold on.
You don't know what you're doing. It isn't just you and Mr. Carpenter.
Mr. Carpenter.
It's everybody. The rest of the world is
involved. I don't give a hang about the rest of the world. I'm in this for me.
Tom.
Now, you'll feel different when you see my picture in the papers.
I feel different right now.
Well, you'll see. You're going to marry a hero.
I'm not going to marry anybody. Not even a hero.
Hey, Helen. Hello? General Cutler? General, my name is Tom Stevens, with a V. I have positive information about the spaceman and where he's staying. Right. Yeah, of course I'm sure. He is living in a boarding house at 1615 M Street, Northwest. That is correct, General.
Yes, I have all of it now, Mr. Stevens, and thank you very much indeed. I want to talk to you further, but I haven't time now. We want to act on this.
Yes, sir?
Have Colonel Ryder deploy all Zone 5 units according to Plan B immediately. Investigate 1615 M Street, Northwest for presence of spaceman. Repeat.
Right here. Did you see Tom? What does he say?
No good. It's too late. I got a taxi outside. Hurry.
attention zone 5. Man and woman observed entering taxi at 1615 M Street Northwest. Man is probably Klaatu, alias Carpenter. Established roadblocks according to plan Baker and maintained station. Remain on radio alert until further order.
I don't know. I think we may have been seen getting into the taxi.
Where can you go?
I'm sure Barnhart can arrange to hide me until the meeting tonight.
Where's it going to be?
At the ship. Now look there. Army cars.
Full troops in full gear.
The alarm is out, all right.
It's only a few more blocks to Professor Barnhart's.
I'm worried about Gort. I'm afraid of what he might do if anything should happen to me.
Gort? But he's a robot.
He's a product of centuries of refinement.
But what could he do without you?
There's no limit to what he could do. He could destroy the Earth.
And the city is swarming with patrol cars, hunting you. How can we tell them?
They won't listen. You must listen. If anything happens to me, you must go to Gort. You must give him this message. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto. Gort. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto. Say it.
Gort. Klaatu, Barada,
Nikto.
Gort. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto.
Remember those words.
Klaatu, Barada, Nikto.
On 14th Street from Harvard Street. Man and woman in back seat. License number H0012. H0012. Section 2, close in. This is your target vehicle.
We're hemmed in. Driver, we'll get out here. I'm going to try to run for it. If they get me, you get to Gort. Now.
There he is! Stop him! Shoot! Fire!
Mr. Carpenter!
Go on. Run!
Superhuman, superplanetary skill had bred intuition and a dim power of reason into the enormously complex intelligence inside of Gort's metal brain case. When Helen Benson stumbled up to the shed that housed the space machine, the guards were not there. Then she saw them. They were lying inside, their rifles fused and bent. Gort somehow knew that Klaatu was dead. Gort was already on the move. He was on the move toward Helen.
No! No! God, no!
The visor of his helmet was opening on that cosmic incandescence within, seething with world ruin, aiming impassively at Helen.
God! God! God!
Benson fainted. When she returned to consciousness, she was lying on a dais bathed in a soft, shadowless light in a chamber vaguely circular of completely unfamiliar build. She was in the space machine. The hospital stood brought with his back to her and lying in front of him on a platform. Klaatu moved. He sat up. Stood up.
Mr. Carpenter.
Hello.
I thought you were...
I was. They took me to an emergency hospital at the city jail. Gort broke in and took me back here.
This technique can restore life in some cases, only for a limited time.
How long?
No one can tell. Time enough and more for me to go outside and speak to Professor Barnhart's scientists. I must speak to them. It's what I came for. Gorse will put out the ramp. You people of Earth, you men of science, you are here from all over your world. Europe, Asia, representing many nations, many ideas. I am leaving soon. You will forgive me if I speak bluntly. The universe grows smaller every day. Where I come from, we believe there must be security for all, or no one is secure. This does not mean giving up any freedom, except the freedom to act irresponsibly. This is the message that I ask you to take back when you return to your native land. Tell your people and your government that we have created a race of robots whose function it is to patrol the planets in spaceships and preserve the peace. At the first sign of treachery, they will act automatically. Nothing you have here on Earth can stop them. The penalty for provoking their action is too terrible to risk. Your choice is simple. Live in peace or perish in violence. We shall be waiting for your answer. The decision rests with you. Gort, Baringo. Remember.
I'll remember, Mr. Carpenter.
As the narrator, Lamont Johnson as Tom, Herb Butterfield as Professor Barnhart, Judah Owen as Mr. Harley, Billy Gray as Bobby, Edith Evanson as Mrs. Crockett, and Tyler McVeigh, Bill Conrad, Robert Griffin, Tom Brown, Fred Shields, Marvin Bryan, Shep Rankin, Alastair Duncan, Stephen Roberts, Adeline A. Smith, and Eddie Marr. The Day the Earth Stood Still was based on Harry Bates' story, Farewell to the Master, which appeared in Astounding Science Fiction magazine. Our radio play was adapted by Milton Geiger, and our music was composed and directed by Rudy Schrager.
Michael Rennie, starring in Lux Radio Theater's classic broadcast, The Day the Earth Stood Still, one of those science fiction movies that still holds up pretty well, was the inspiration for that broadcast that came from January 4th, 1954. We have a case for Boston Blackie, and we'll open the file in just a moment as old-time radio drama continues right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.